From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, a federal judge holds off on the Exxon Valdez reopener. The state legislature considers dedicating money to salmon weirs, and another community starts serving local seafoods in schools. All coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
A Seattle seafood processor will pay nearly $2 million in penalties to settle state and federal environmental claims. The proposed agreement requires UNICE to pay civil penalties of $1,909,375 to settle allegations it violated federal and state laws when discharging ammonia and other waste from its facility in Unalaska. United States Attorney Karen Loeffler made the announcement on Wednesday. Regulators contend that beginning in 2005, UNICE discharged ammonia and other pollutants from its facility in Unalaska into surrounding waters without a permit in violation of the Clean Water Act, and that it failed to timely notify authorities of two large releases of ammonia from its facility in December 2007. Ammonia is used in ice making. ExxonMobil Corporation has won the latest round in a dispute with environmentalists over cleaning up oil left on the shoreline of Prince William Sound from the 1989 spill from the tanker Exxon Valdez. Federal Judge H. Russell Holland ruled Monday in Anchorage against a request from former University of Alaska marine science professor Rick Steiner. He filed a motion trying to force the oil company to pay a $92 million claim filed against Exxon in 2006 by the state and federal governments in what is known as the Reopener Clause. Holland says forcing the issue could injure one of the parties. Government lawyers are waiting for studies on any remaining oil in the environment and the effectiveness of cleanup techniques before pursuing the claim. Steiner also asked Holland to rescind the $125 million in criminal fines that the court gave back to Exxon in 1991 because it appeared the corporation would act in good faith and pay to restore Prince William Sound. Exxon says it doesn't have any obligation to pay more. It paid $900 million in restitution in a 1991 settlement. ExxonMobil spokeswoman Cynthia Bergman says the purpose of the reopener clause was to pay for any unforeseen damage to Prince William Sound, but there's no devastation to invoke the provision.
The good news is that hasn't happened. There has not been a catastrophic failure of a population or species. So what we are saying is that the government has had time to make its claim under the reopener provision, but they have yet to do so, and they've been unable thus far to develop the scientific support required to invoke that reopener provision.
Bergman says the crash of the herring fishery 2 years after the spill has not been proven to be linked to the spill. Bergman says that means the government can't ask for more money. Holland did ask for a status report on the negotiations between the government and Exxon in September.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
Managers at the Kodiak office of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game warned that current funding levels could cause cutbacks in core operations for the Commercial Fisheries Division. This comes as legislators in Juneau put together a budget for the agency. Regional Supervisor of Commercial Fisheries Steve Honnold in Kodiak says increased personnel costs coupled with stagnant funding levels has forced cost-cutting of key programs by reducing operations at fish-counting stations on river weirs.
Most of the things we've done, essentially what I call nickel and dime some of our budgets, just reduced them so there's not much contingency left in a lot of our budgets. We've been able to kind of hold it together in most areas, but we're getting down now where we have to cut projects. You know, we probably can't scale back weirs any more than we have already.
The weirs are used to track escapement of salmon and allow area management biologists to manage Kodiak salmon fisheries. Last year, operation of seasonal weirs were already shortened, and that could happen again this summer. With less hard escapement data from the weirs, Honnold says biologists are forced to be more conservative on how often they open a fishery.
Whenever we have some limitation in collecting data, then our decisions have to be more conservative. That usually means reducing some fishing opportunity.
Meanwhile, in Juneau, the House Finance Committee is finalizing appropriations for the agency. House Majority Leader Alan Osterman of Kodiak says an amendment has been introduced that would dedicate about $250,000 to fish counting weirs.
At the last public hearing they had, there was a lot of people in Kodiak that came out and testified in favor of increased monies for the Weir and the Karlik and on the Fraser. And so we got that amendment in. It's been approved in the budget so far, but the budget's not complete.
But funding for the Weirs is not a done deal. Legislators in the House have until the end of the week to bring the matter to a floor vote. Then it goes on to the Senate. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has a newly redesigned website that is substantially different from the one stakeholders are used to. KDLG student reporter Sam Wright went online and filed this report.
If you haven't been on the website of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in the past couple of weeks, you might be surprised when you next go online to check out things like fish forecasts, hunting seasons, or historical information. That's because Fish and Game recently rolled out a completely redesigned website. Jaron Bruce is a deputy director in the Division of Commercial Fisheries.
We were actually one of the earlier adopters of the internet as a major way of getting our information out. And it wasn't organized by subject matter, and that made it difficult to find things.
Bruce says the department did its research and looked at many other websites and determined that it would be more useful to organize the new site by subject.
So you see there, we have things organized under fishing, and we have all the stuff that's under fishing. So you can get your licenses under fishing, you can find out about commercial, you can find out about sport, subsistence, personal use, you can find out about aquatic farming, hatcheries, and then you can find out about fisheries research. And it's all grouped around the subject of fishing.
Alaskans and other fish and game stakeholders who have specific areas of the fish and game website bookmarked in their web browsers should note that those bookmarks are likely no longer accurate. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is asking website users that come across broken or misdirected links to let them know. In Dillingham, I'm KDLG student reporter Sam Wright.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. On the web at amsea.org.
State troopers are still investigating a break-in at a fish hatchery on Port St. Nicholas Road near Klawak that resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands of king salmon fry. The hatchery is the smaller of two operated by the Prince of Wales Hatchery Association. Between 5:30 p.m. on March 1st and 8 a.m. the next day, a person or persons entered the hatchery building and turned off the water supply valves to four incubators. Oxygen fell to fatal levels, and it's estimated that 98% to 99% of the king salmon fry died. Several employees were able to save 1% to 2% of the young salmon. Jake Snyder of the Prince of Wales Hatchery Association says the Port St. Nicholas facility raises about 400,000 kings per year. Says the fish are reared at the hatchery and released in streams in Kaufman Cove and at Port St. Nicholas. Snyder says the larger Klawak hatchery that produces 5 million coho annually was not affected. Snyder says they're still trying to assess the damage at the smaller hatchery and determine the financial effect. State troopers are investigating the incident and ask anyone with information to contact them. The fishing vessel Captain Andrew remains grounded as of Friday morning near King Cove, despite earlier reports to the contrary. The Captain Andrew is still stuck on Bold Cape, and Magone Marine Services of Unalaska currently has salvors on scene working to recover the vessel. On Tuesday, the Coast Guard erroneously reported that Magone had successfully removed the 58-foot seiner from the rocks just 2 days after its five-member crew had been rescued by the fishing vessel Just in Case. A pilot program to serve locally caught seafood in Sitka's middle school is gaining momentum. Organizers are modeling the project on farm-to-schools efforts in the Lower 48. As KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports, the target audience seems to be eating it up.
Sitka's Fish to Schools program launched in January and is aiming to serve locally caught seafood twice a month at Blatchley Middle School for the rest of the year. I showed up in school a couple of days after February's fish lunch. Luckily for me, this guy at the front of the line had both a discerning palate and a sharp memory.
I think it was great. It's like one of the best lunches they've had in a long time.
What was good about it?
It was nice and fresh. Most of the food is like pre-made and then just heated up. Like it was something fresh for once.
Zach Wright is in sixth grade. He was one of 39 students who took fish over the three other choices. This is roughly 30% of the 127 hot lunches served that day, and almost twice as many as those who chose fish in January. Zach clearly appreciates good food, but I wondered if he gets the rest of it, why people are interested in eating locally.
Do you know where the fish came from that was in your taco on Monday?
Actually, no, I don't.
It was caught here in Sitka.
Sweet.
Does it make any difference to you where your food comes from?
It's cool if it was here because it's, like, we're using it from around. We're not shipping from other places, and we get to use less money.
Okay, he gets it. This has to be good news for Sitka's Fish to Schools program.
My goal is that, you know, with more student involvement and parents knowing about this program, that more kids will be choosing to eat hot lunch on the day when there's local fish being served.
Lexi Fish works for the Sitka Conservation Society. Besides having the right name, she grew up in her family's fishing business. She took on the Fish in Schools program last fall when the idea emerged out of Sitka's annual health summit. Fish says she found immediate support for the idea among Sitka's processors.
It's a relatively small amount of fish that's needed per lunch. It's about 10 to 15 pounds per lunch at this point, with 25 students choosing the fish. So it's not that much. And for that reason, I think the processors, they said, oh, that's a great program. We can donate. We can do that at least till the end of the school year.
Fish will be working next on outreach in the classroom to build awareness about local foods and finding ways to offset the higher cost of local seafood versus other protein purchased for the institutional programs in Sitka. Jim Moorman is the director of food services for NANA Management in Sitka. He oversees meals in the schools and the Pioneers Home. Moorman calls the Fish in Schools program unknown territory for students who have demonstrated a consistent preference for pizza. He says he was surprised by the favorable reception to fish at Blatchley.
We served a soft taco with Pacific cod, homemade salsa, homemade tartar sauce, the toppings for the tacos, and it went fairly well.
Moorman says he had no trouble incorporating local fish into the menu. His crew even offered a fish witch as an alternative to the tacos. If the program expands, the only limiting factor might be freezer space.
It's not a burden to do it. It's much healthier for sure. If we were to do the whole school district, we would just have to increase the amounts, and that's not a big deal for the staff that I have.
The big deal, as Lexi Fish sees it, is funding. While donations are adequate to cover the pilot project, she'd like to find a steady funding stream to allow her to expand to the rest of Sitka's schools and to inspire other communities to follow Sitka's lead. Fish herself is following the lead of similar efforts in Dillingham and Kodiak, and the lead of the larger local foods movement.
In a lot of areas in the lower 48, there's a big movement, a farm-to-schools movement, where there's locally caught produce served in the schools, and the kids learn about where this food comes from in their state or in their region. And for us, you know, the first place to start with that is fish, and it does increase the awareness of what we produce and what we have abundant here locally.
Fish anticipates that grants and donations will continue to be a part of Sitka's Fish to Schools program for the near future. She says $100 can provide fish for 66 meals. I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KMXT's Jacob Resnick in Kodiak, KDLG's student reporter Sam Wright in Dillingham, KRBD's Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan, KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, and KCAW's Robert Woolsey in Sitka. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.